I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Florida's $2.4 billion prison system is now under new leadership. Edwin Buss took over as Secretary of the Department of Corrections in January after running Indiana's prison system. He's been described by national corrections experts as an up-and-coming leader in American prisons, but it's a big job to handle. Florida's prison system is the third largest in the United States, with more than 100,000 inmates. The budget is tight, prison closures are on the horizon, and how do you make inmates eat better while saving money? We'll find out next on Intersection. Edwin Buss is the new Secretary of Florida's Department of Corrections. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in. So what are the biggest challenges that you find facing the Department of Corrections right now?
Well, my 110th day on the job, I immediately faced, obviously, a recession due to the Great Recession and the economic collapse. Obviously, state governments are really tasked with saving money. So we had a very aggressive budget reduction a budget plan that we had to put in place immediately. So that was probably the most immediate challenge that we had at the Florida Department of Correction.
Well, you know, the DOC is known for having the largest budget of the state agencies up in Tallahassee. When you talk about having to make cuts, are these major impacts that we're going to be seeing in the way prisons are run in the state?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've got to be much more efficient, not only here in Florida, but across the nation. You see state budgets being collapsed, not as much money coming in revenue, so therefore you don't have as much money to spend. In some states, they spend more on corrections than they do higher education, and thankfully in Florida that isn't the case. But this budget session, this next fiscal year, we will reduce our budget by $145 million. Mark, I would suggest to you that there is no other correction system that has such an aggressive goal of reducing their budget by $145 million.
Well, was it a situation where you walked in and you found some areas of waste that you could trim spending, or are you cutting into, you know, crucial surfaces?
Well, I wouldn't classify it as waste, but what I think we have is a very aggressive plan to consolidate and streamline operations and then bring services in more efficiently in prisons. 2 months ago, we had a plan to consolidate and close five inefficient prisons. That plan saved $55 million. We immediately notified the staff about 90 days ago, and on July 1st, five facilities will close. Those inmates will be incorporated into other correctional facilities. We didn't lay off any staff. What we did is we offered them the ability to transfer other institutions, and we optimized those current prisons and maximized the capacity there, and were able to close five very inefficient prisons.
You know, the Department of Corrections also announced, I believe, among those five prisons, there's three of them, two of them boot camp programs. You had a road prison program to shut down as a means of trimming costs. There was a facility in Brevard County near Coco, Hendry Correctional Institute near Immokalee, and Hillsborough Correctional Institute in Riverview, expected to save maybe about $30 million from those three facilities alone. Is that about right?
Yes. And then also, especially in the situation with Brevard and Hendry, because there were so many capital projects targeted for those facilities because they were older facilities, had to put new roofs on, had to do a lot of preventive maintenance and other capital projects to keep those prisons. We actually, in terms of cost avoidance, we avoided $25 million more in additional costs that would have been incurred by the taxpayers had we kept those facilities open.
You know, the facility down near Immokalee, south of Lake Okeechobee, is an area that's been hit by really hard by the recession, maybe about a 40% unemployment rate down there. What do you anticipate the impact is on a community when a facility that might be one of the biggest employers in the area shuts down? Even though you're able to relocate those workers, there's still a lot of ancillary business that comes from having those people in the community.
Absolutely. And that's why Governor Scott has pledged to make sure that we not only transition the state employees, if they can't transfer, it just doesn't work for them personally to transfer another correctional facility, but also have the ability to transfer, get a job skill, and transfer to some other occupation. Obviously, that area of the state, I believe, has been hardest hit by the Great Recession. So hopefully, with the help of the Chamber of Commerce and other economic groups that are looking at targeting that area for new business.
Where do correctional officers go or prison workers go from these retraining programs?
Well, in this state, a lot of our correctional staff go to work in county jails because they have that skill set. They get to go through the academy. They're considered certified correctional officers. They have a lot of options. They can actually transfer into federal prisons. There's one west of here, the Coleman Correctional Facility. It's one of the largest federal prisons in the United States.
You spent more than 20 years running prisons up in Indiana, or I should say, you spent more than 20 years working in prisons in Indiana, eventually rising to actually run the system up there. What's the biggest difference you see between the way that system is run and what we have in Florida?
Well, Florida locks up a lot more people than other states. Third largest system in the country. A lot of the correctional facilities here are smaller. And that actually serves us well in terms of making them more safe and secure. I would stack Florida's correctional staff, especially the uniform ranks, up against anybody in the nation. They run very safe, very secure facilities. But there's a lot of them. There's 56 major facilities and over 150 facilities in total when you include the annexes, the work camps, and the work releases. In Indiana, there's one-third of the population, roughly 30,000 offenders, but there's only 26 correctional facilities, and that includes 6 juvenile correctional facilities as well. So a lot less facilities, about a third of the offenders. We have a unified system here in Florida, which, again, it serves us well. And what I mean by that is both probation and paroles run at the state level, whereas Indiana, those are county functions. So there's a little bit disconnect in the criminal justice system in Indiana, not so in Florida.
What's the biggest thing that surprised you about Florida's prisons and correction system?
The number of facilities and the size. And this isn't necessarily a disadvantage, but we give back a lot in terms of these work squads, work crews. We give back nearly $40 million in labor to local communities in terms of cleaning up roads and some areas in rural areas and towns and so forth. I don't think you see that in most prison systems throughout the country. And that's good. I mean, offenders should give back while they're incarcerated. It gains them a work ethic in some work skills. So that was somewhat surprising, somewhat different than Indiana, and something I hadn't seen in a lot of states.
Do you see a big difference in the type of inmates that make up the population here in Florida versus what you experienced in Indiana?
Not really. In Indiana, Midwest gangs are very prevalent, the Chicago gangs. I actually don't see the gang problems here in Florida. In terms of a lot of people with addiction issues being incarcerated, very similar to Indiana to Florida as well.
What's the biggest challenge you faced when you were running the prison system in Indiana, and how is that impacting what you're doing here in Florida?
Because we don't have as many facilities in Indiana, we had to be very cognizant of violence in the prison systems. They have two facilities that are over 100 years in Florida. One, the one that I actually worked the most time in and then returned was the warden, was the Indiana State Prison. That facility was built in 1860. That was 3 years before Abraham Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address. And in that facility, an old structure like that, there were a lot of challenges. They're still housing maximum security offenders in an old facility like that. Florida has much newer facilities, actually, and because they're not nearly as large, we have 3,000-bed facilities in Florida. I don't think there's any facility, in Indiana, I don't think there's any facility, or at least most facilities in Florida, they don't have more, even the major facilities, more than 1,000 inmates in them.
Why is that size important? Does it create a different environment safety-wise for the correctional officers or for the inmates or both?
For both, absolutely. The smaller facility, the easier it is to manage.
In what ways? Just because the population, less things can go wrong? Or?
Yes. These mega facilities, 3,000 beds, California, almost all their facilities are overcrowded and like that, and they, of course, have issues in terms of violence in these correctional facilities as well due to that.
Well, as you're shutting down prisons, you're having to move inmates around the state. Do you find that capacity is being reached in Florida facilities, or is there still a lot of excess room?
There's still today a lot of excess room. There's roughly 7,000 beds open beds, empty beds in these correctional facilities. In addition to that, Mark, though, there's new facilities years ago that were bonded and being built as we speak. So our capacity is going to increase. We're going to have more prison space than we know what to do with, which from my understanding in the history of Florida isn't a bad thing necessarily. A lot of people would say because there were times when we were overcrowded and we didn't have enough capacity, but that isn't going to be an issue in the next decade.
Does that create a problem, though, in this tight budget climate? If you've got facilities that are not full to capacity, you've got buildings that are not being utilized to their fullest extent?
Yes, it is. It is a budget issue. They're expensive to run. If you have empty beds, those are beds going to waste. It's kind of like inventory there, and you're not taking advantage of the inventory. Well, inventory is money. And it's going to cost. It's not the best use of the taxpayer dollars. So that's why we must continue to optimize prison capacity. And probably we will advance more consolidations of other prisons because we'll be able to structurally lower the budget and create great savings for the taxpayers of Florida by doing it that way.
How quick does something like that happen?
We were able to do the last consolidation in 120 days. I mean, by July 1st, Hardy and Brevard, the two big facilities, will be empty.
Why do you think that you came in and that was done so quickly? Was that something that was being handled under your predecessor, Walt McNeil? Was that process also going on?
No, it was not. We did something similar to this in Indiana 2 years ago when we faced a crisis. We maximized our prisons. So I had experience in doing that coming into this situation.
We're talking with Edwin Buss. He is the new secretary of the Florida Department of Corrections. You are listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Mark Simpson. The Department of Corrections has plans to privatize many prisons in an 18-county region that stretches from Bradenton all the way to the Florida Keys. And there are a number of private prisons already in Florida, including the flagship one, Blackwater River Correctional Facility near Pensacola. And this prison was designed to house inmates with complex medical problems, things like HIV or mental health issues. And a recent Miami Herald article noted that there are inmates of that particular type that are not being kept at the Blackwater facility, and that in this facility there are cells, special cells for psychiatric cases that are empty at the moment. So why is that?
I can't speak to why it is. What I can do, though, is change it, because you're absolutely right. That facility, there are very few facilities like built like that in the entire nation, whether alone Florida. It is specifically designed to house those offenders with special needs, more acute needs, and those offenders who suffer from some mental illness and may be a danger themselves and others. There is no excuse for not taking advantage of that physical plant, and that is what we are going to do moving forward.
Does Florida need that, or are those facilities available elsewhere? Because it's my understanding that those types of prisoners are housed in Santa Rosa County, which is not far away.
Some are in Santa Rosa County, and they do a wonderful job at that facility. But others are handled or being housed at UCI in that facility next to Florida and the Florida State Prison. Those two facilities are 60, 70, 80 years old. And Blackwater is again, it was specifically designed just to house that type of challenging offender. So we're much better served by housing offenders at Blackwater as opposed to some of these older facilities.
Is that also have to tie in with the fact that it's a private prison?
You know, I'm not sure. What it's my understanding that when Blackwater opened, they didn't need the bed space necessarily, even though the state had entered into an agreement with GEO Corp, the Florida-based private prison corporation. It's one of the larger ones in the world. It entered into agreement some years back to build the Blackwater prison. When it was finally built, the Department of Correction didn't need the bed space necessarily, but obviously the physical plan of Blackwater was such that they could house offenders there, and it was newer, and they could do it more affordable. So what the Department of Correction did is they closed dorms at other facilities throughout the state and then filled the Blackwater with those offenders without taking into account that the offenders that the facility was suited for were those with acute mental illnesses, more challenging offenders.
You know, the idea with the private prisons, of course, to save money, but they're also able to use non-union correctional officers. And I wonder, what kind of impact does that have on the level of service that's offered?
Well, you would hope it wouldn't have any impact. Again, these private prison companies are in states all throughout the nation. You would think they would bring their best practices to the Florida facilities as well, and they would operate them at least the same level of service that state governments can provide as well.
Do you think that Florida is going to see a situation where they end up taking prisoners from other states in order to fill up that excess capacity and also bring in additional revenue?
Well, that's an interesting idea, and I think that's a discussion that we should have, because obviously we have a commodity. We have prison space. In Indiana, we house prisoners from another state, and it worked. It created jobs for Hoosiers. Not only that, but it brought additional revenue to the state of Indiana. So we have prison space, and that might be a conversation for the future.
Is that something that the governor has talked about with you at all?
He has not.
Are you planning to bring it up?
I may, yes.
Any timeline?
No timeline right now.
Between privatizing prisons and closing prisons, what is your vision for the department's future, and what would the effect on costs and inmate recidivism be?
Well, Florida runs some very safe, very secure prisons. And again, I would say they were second to none. Where we can do a better job, and it's no fault for the fine staff who work in these facilities, but what we need to do is put more emphasis on reentry in recidivism. And to do that, what we do is we need to create best practices in correctional facilities. And
but haven't we heard that buzzword, best practices? That's something that's been said for the past several correctional directors coming in and out of Tallahassee. What are you going to do that's different?
I'm going to actually create the programs.
Think it's not there?
It's not there. No. Well, there's some facilities that do not have one teacher. One of the facilities we closed, actually, Hendry, does not have teachers, does not have substance abuse programs. There are very few, considering 63% of all offenders in the correctional system, out of the 102,000, have an addiction issue, yet only a few thousand of those are getting substance abuse. We need tens of thousands of inmates to get substance abuse treatment. If you don't at least have a GED and you come in the prison system, you need to get at least a GED, hopefully some vocation skill or some work skill, so that you can be, when you leave, you're better positioned to get a job. The correlation between recidivism and unemployment is significant. If you leave the prison system and you don't get a job, you're very likely to come back. So what we need to do is we may make sure that they are positioned to, an offender when they leave the system, are positioned to get a job, become a taxpayer, not a tax debtor.
Do you think that's going to be possible given the dwindling state resources that are coming out of the budget office?
Absolutely. We can be creative. You have correctional officers with degrees who could, while being correctional officers, they can certainly teach some type of vocational training or education class as well.
Is that something the correctional officers union would be open to?
I believe they would. I found the correctional officer, the PBA, to be a very reasonable union.
Talk to me a little bit about violence in Florida's prison system. What is the situation? Are Florida's prisons violent places? You hear and see flashy news reports about dangerous things happening in prisons, things getting smuggled in, especially as cell phones are getting smaller and smaller, gangs sometimes operating within prisons. Is that the kind of situation we have in the state?
No. Well, yes, there's some of those issues, but given the clientele, I mean, these people aren't in prison, you know, because they were choir boys and girls. They did bad things. Unfortunately, some of them continue to be criminals inside the prison system. But again, I'd submit to you that these prisons in Florida, thanks to the staff's efforts, are run very secure, very safe. Do we have some contraband issues? We do. But I'd tell you that compared to other states, they're probably much more smaller or minor in nature. Having said that, though, we need to be diligent. We have 2,600 less employees today than we had just four months ago. So you would think that 2,600 employees, that must have created a situation where violence would be on the rise. But I tell you, it's just the opposite. Violence actually has dropped in the prison system this year here in Florida. Nationwide, at least in some states, from what I've read, not so. So I think that just speaks to the staff and the great job that they do each and every day.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, are there specific things that are being done in the state that aren't being done in other places? Because you look at the statistics as the third largest prison system in the nation. Based on what you just said, it sounds pretty surprising that Florida would have such a fabulous prison system.
Well, you know, people are incarcerated just generally across the nation because of class, lowest socioeconomic class, race. Minorities are vastly overrepresented in place. Urban areas, people who reside in urban areas are overrepresented compared to rural areas. So, you know, we're a highly urbanized state. So I guess you could see a situation, and we are a big state. So I guess you could see a situation where we'd have, you know, a lot of offenders in this state incarcerated. But, you know, I think by and large, Floridians are pretty decent people. And unless, you know, that us Floridians have some predisposed genetic defect for criminal behavior, I think that we need to look at everything, including sentencing and really closely at recidivism and programming while they're incarcerated. So that's not just what we call just deserts in the prison system where an inmate is confined, but rather they're held accountable for whatever their criminogenic need or their behavior is, that they address that, whether they're an addict, whether they have anger issues, whatever it be, that gets addressed in the prison system so that they when they get out, they don't come back.
You're saying the tough love model doesn't work?
Well, I'm not saying that generally. You can't speak in generalities about the criminal justice system. You tend to get in trouble that way. But what I could say is I think that across the nation, the entire criminal justice systems are being looked at. A lot of people are asking me, because Florida was projected to have 115,000 inmates incarcerated by now, but they only have 102,000. So in the legislative session, a lot of people ask me, well, what happened? And you know, I would tell you that crime levels have been decreasing for years. We probably have reached a point of saturation. Everybody that we would want to lock up has been locked up by now.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with Edwin Buss. He's the new Secretary of Florida's Department of Corrections. I'm Mark Simpson. What's your perspective on the Florida prison system? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter. You can shoot an email also to intersection@WMFE.org. During the spring's legislative session, Republican lawmakers discussed eliminating minimum mandatory sentences for nonviolent criminals, especially drug offenders. It didn't pass, but you pushed for similar reforms in Indiana, and I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about why you did that and what you hope to accomplish in Florida in that regard.
Well, in Indiana, Governor Daniels, along with the Chief Justice, the Attorney General, and both houses of the legislature got together and in bipartisan fashion decided that we wanted an objective, data-driven research of our criminal justice system. And what we found was startling. We had folks from the Council of State Government, Pew, come in, researchers, $1 million in research. And what we found in our Indiana criminal justice system was that we locked people up at a rate much higher than other states surrounding us, and that the laws over the past decade, we had created 117 new laws, had never dialed back or enhancing of a current law, never had dialed back one law. And to give you an example, for possession of 3 grams of cocaine, roughly what would be a little sugar pack that you'd put in a cup of coffee, in the state of Ohio, you would get probation. In Indiana, you got 10 years for that.
That's pretty harsh.
Even in the state of Texas, you much harsher laws than Texas, Kansas. We looked at Indiana compared to the rest of the nation. You know, Governor Scott is always the smartest person in the room. I think that Florida may want to look at a similar approach where we ask somebody to come in and look at Florida's criminal justice system, make it data-driven, objective, a good scientific view of our or evaluation of our criminal justice system so we can make some decisions here in Florida as well.
Is there an example of a harsh law in Florida that you think might be one that could take that approach?
You know, I don't know because we haven't done that, and I haven't been in the state long enough. But given that, you know, we're not the third largest state in the nation, but we lock up at the third largest rate, I think there's an opportunity there to look at it.
You're walking into a situation at the Department of Corrections where there have been two secretaries over the past 4 years, and you know that's a lot of turnover, not a lot of time to develop institutional knowledge for those previous secretaries. And that impacts not only how you relate to the department, but also how you relate to lawmakers. And you just came out of the legislative session. Talk to me a little bit about how you hope to improve maybe what's been a difficult time at the agency.
Well, you know, I want to work in collaboration with not only the chairs, but everybody on the committees for criminal justice and corrections, appropriation and policy. I've reached out to all those folks since the session has ended. When I'm in their districts, I'm going to visit their districts. You know, I want to be sensitive to whatever concerns, whatever issues they have, and we just hope to work very close. I've invited them to prisons. A lot of them have taken me up on that. So they've had the opportunity to actually go to the prisons and see, you know, what our staff are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. I think through that type of process, I think that we'll be better served. The legislature will understand what our needs are, and then they can, you know, create laws and legislate that will serve Florida best.
Were you surprised by the legislative process in Tallahassee, or was it pretty much what you expected?
No, it's much different than Indiana. They legislate more policy here, including in the budget, than Indiana does. So it was somewhat different. Yes.
How does that change the way you do your job?
Well, it just means that I need to work harder with the legislative committees. So that they have a better understanding of what the challenges are in the criminal justice system, in the correction system.
There's been a growing trend, and I mean that both literally and figuratively, in the Florida prison system. Inmates are growing parts of their meals, broccoli, cabbage, cantaloupe, watermelon, at farms and gardens. And during fiscal year 09 to 10, inmates harvested nearly 5 million pounds of produce in Florida. Any plans to expand that program?
We do. In fact, we want to aggressively expand. I think at every correctional facility that currently grows food, they're expanding by a certain percentage, whatever they can. If they have the irrigation, they have the farmland to do it, we're going to continue to do that. You may know that was one of Governor Scott's promises before the election, and we plan to make sure that promise gets fulfilled.
Have you tried it?
Yes, we're expanding. We've expanded in a majority of the prisons already.
I mean the vegetables. Have you tried the vegetables?
Yes, they're good.
Do you eat them at work, or where do you get them?
No, when I'm at the correctional facility, then I'll sample them.
The Department of Corrections also announced it will provide newly released inmates with a new prescription drug discount card. It's offered in partnership with Recovery Health Network. How does this help the recidivism rate?
Well, a lot of offenders suffer from mental illness or they're medication compliant. If they get out and they don't have access to that medication, it literally is setting them up for failure. So by getting them scripts, a prescription, the prescription discount card, we literally help them make sure that they stay medical compliant, they don't have any problems while on probation, parole, or have any interactions, unnecessary interactions with law enforcement.
We've been talking with Edwin Buss. He's the new secretary of Florida's Department of Corrections. Edwin, good to speak with you.
You too.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.